But I wanted to draw out something relevant to the Sangha Day, which is the role of communication in Sangha. And why Sangha communication is important. I think for me, it's such an integral part of the Sangha. It's so intertwined with Kalyana Mitrata, with our study groups, with our meetings, with our communities, with our right livelihoods. It's quite an important bit. And there's a quote from Bhante where he says that we are the sum total of our actions, of body, speech and mind, and no more. And I think this quote makes it clear that we need to be quite careful with what we do, with what we say and what we think. And speech being such a prominent part of our interaction and our sort of day-to-day living is really very important in that way. And these three, the body, speech and mind, are of course the main means by which we endeavour to cross the turbulent stream of samsara and end up at the other shore of enlightenment. And as our guide, we have the precepts, of course, that we've adopted voluntarily in order to progress our endeavours, in order to grow and develop towards Buddhahood and reach that realisation, the same realisation that the Buddha had. So the first level of training in this speech, area of speech and communication, is of course the level of a mitra, where you're simply expected to be truthful. That's the only speech precept that mitras take. If you then want to carry out your training, carry on with your training and join the order, you'll take on additional precepts. And those are to do with speaking in a helpful, harmonious and kindly manner. So this much is probably quite familiar for you. I don't need to go into it much more. I'd like to though say that coming from a non-English background and from a non-English speaking country, I've noticed that English language is quite a wonderful tool in this respect. It's got a few qualities that I don't often hear talked about, but are there for me at least. And those qualities are sensitivity and subtlety. It's quite a sort of a precise, sensitive and subtle language. That's what I've noticed. I'm sure others have probably noticed the same. But it just struck me how wonderfully placed you are in this culture and having this language to take it further. You've got quite a leg up on a couple of other languages I know of. I'm not talking down Finnish language in any way. That has its own great qualities and its own advantages. But with the English language, and since I'm talking to the English audience, you've got quite a nice set of tools to take further your development of communication. So when we speak of the precepts and ethics of speech generally, it's sometimes in a way that we pay attention to the absence of those qualities, helpfulness, kindness, truthfulness and so on. So we kind of bemoan the lack of them. But I want to take another angle today. I don't want to look at what we're lacking. I want to look at what might happen if two people who are already very, very, very advanced in their practice of language, in their practice of ethics, meet and how they communicate, how they conduct themselves, what do they say to each other, and just generally how they communicate, how are they with each other. We do find many instances of this kind of speech in the Buddhist texts. Yeah, so there's Sariputra and Moggallana, a well-known pair of Buddha's chief disciples, whose communication is often kind of referred to as a sort of almost a paradigm of helpful, harmonious, kindly and truthful speech. And then there's also the relationship between the Buddha and Ananda, his companion. And their interaction is often very explicitly in that mode. But I want to stay a bit closer to home today. And I want to go to ancient Ireland, or Erin, as it used to be called. As you might expect, there's a story in this. So the story is simply this. There's a person called Adne. Adne is an Olav of Ireland. And Olav of Ireland means that he's a kind of chief druid in the place. He's the king's chief counselor. He's the chief kind of maintainer of the law, of the traditions, of the family lineages, and so on and so on. So he's a bit of a mine of information and a very important person. So Adne is the present Olav. Nether is his son. And at this time of the story, we find him in Scotland. He's gone there to study. He's on his way to becoming a druid and a very important person, and he's gone to further his learning. The third person in this story is Ferhyrne, who is also a druid, and he's been chosen as Olav of Ireland after Adne dies. So Adne has died. Ferhyrne, in the absence of Nether, has been chosen to be the Olav of Ireland. And first thing that Nether knows about his father's death is when he walks on a seashore and he hears the lapping of the waves on the seashore, and they communicate the fact that his father has died. So this is quite a subtle form of communication and not generally practiced, but this is the fact. And Nether decides to return to Ireland to see first of all what he can do for his father and what can be done in terms of Olavship, because he is one of the hereditary people entitled to that throne. So he comes back to Ireland with some of his friends. They travel, and on the way one of his friends makes a point that no beardless boy has ever received an Olavship before. So this gives an idea of how young Nether is. He's about, I don't know, very young, not beard yet. But Nether has a crafty answer. He plucks a tuft of grass from the ground, does a spell on it, and it becomes his beard. Yeah. He does the Harry Potter thing, this one. Grassimus beardimus pum. And you've got a beard. So no problem, he's quite accomplished. So he arrives at the capital. He goes to the throne room and he sees that the seat of the Olav is empty. Ferhyrne is somewhere else. He's gone to travel. He's gone to maybe teach somebody somewhere. He's not present. And on the seat there's a little, there is a mantle, kind of robe, and Nether puts that on. It's a very beautiful robe, and it's a robe of the Olav. So in a sense, he's claiming his place as Olav. So Ferhyrne hears about this very soon, gets a bit angry, rushes back to the capital, goes to the throne room, leans on the door jamb, and has a look at Nether, who is sitting there on his seat. And he says to himself, who is this poet wrapped in a splendid robe? Who shows himself before he has chanted poetry? According to what I see, he is only a pupil. His beard but an arrangement of grasses. Who is this contentious poet? I've never heard any wisdom from Adne's son. I never heard him ready with knowledge. A mistake it is. He's sitting in this seat. And, of course, Nether hears this. And being a younger person, he addresses Ferhyrne with some politeness and kindness and civility And he says, O ancient one, every sage tries to correct another. Any sage may reproach an ignorant man, but before he does so, he should see what evil is present. Welcome is the piercing dart of wisdom. Slight is the blemish to a youth until his art is questioned. Step with care, O chieftain. You belittle me with knowledge, though I have sucked the teat of a wise man. Yeah. So, Ferhadne has returned. He has his doubts about the situation. But Nether is saying, okay, before you jump into conclusions, let's investigate the situation. And Ferhadne sees the reason in this. His anger calms down and he becomes a bit more amenable to discussion. And this is an old way of doing it in Ireland, apparently. When two sages meet, they test each other out a little bit with some questions. And the questions are quite simple in form. And they are the questions like, where do you come from? What is your name? And what art do you practice? So Ferhadne is moving on to the sort of investigation part of the dialogue, where he tries to find out whether actually Nether has any right to sit on the seat of the Olaf. Yeah. But of course, this being accomplished sages and very ethically developed, very well practiced in their rhetorical skills, it's not a simple matter. So when he asks where you come from, it's not like you come from Gosinga upstairs and I live here and my name is Sterajoti and I'm a safeguarding officer. It's not that what they're asking. They're asking for what their name means, and in English as well, there's this double meaning when you say where do you come from. Yeah, there's this you could ask it directly as a sort of so you can ask it as a factual question, in which case I come from upstairs and so on, but you could also ask it as a where do you come from in terms of your motivation, your inspiration, and so on, and so on, and so on. And if you want to know more about the person, that's what you're asking. And this is what they are asking. And the dialogue proceeds. So Ferhadne says, okay, the boy wants to be questioned. I'll question him. So he says, a question, wise lad. Where do you come from? And then they answers, not hard to answer, from the heel of a sage. From a confluence of wisdom, from perfection of goodness, from brightness of sunshine, from the nine hazels of poetry, from the state where truth's worth is measured, from the measure where truth is realized, from that reality where all lies are vanquished, where all colors are seen, where art is reborn. And this is Nether's answer to where do you come from? Yeah. And then it's his turn to ask Ferhadne the question. And he says, and you, my master, where do you come from? And Ferhadne answers, not hard to answer. Down the columns of age, along the streams of Leinster, from the elf mound of Nechtan's wife, down the forearm of Nuada's wife, from the extent of the land of the sun, from the height of the mansions of the moon, along the babe's navel string. So again, this is Ferhadne's answer to where do you come from? And as you notice, there's no factual information here, probably. apart from the Babe's navel string, that's factual. Everything else is elusive. Everything else is symbolic. Everything else is evocative of something that they want the other person to understand. So what they're doing with this investigation into each other is trying to reach below surface, to go deeper, to find out the depth of the other person's inspiration and their motivations and so on. And in this way, this is not a dialogue in an ordinary sense. This is a test. Yeah. So they're testing each other. And the dialogue continues. Ferhadna says, "O wise lad, what is your name?" And Nede answers, "Not hard to answer. Very small, very great, very bright, very hard. Fierceness of fire, fire of speech, noise of knowledge, well of wisdom, sword of song. I sing straight from the heart of the fire." That's Nether's answer to "What is your name?" I think we as order members can relate to that a bit more. Because when we're ordained, we get a name, we get a second name, we get a new name. And often that name has a meaning. So often enough, we don't bring it out quite as much as we should, maybe. And there's a bit of a challenge here. So when somebody asks for your name next time, order members, please elaborate. So that was Nether's answer. And then it's Nether's turn to ask the question. So he says, "And you, O aged one, what is your name?" And Ferhadna says, "Not hard. Questioner, declarer, champion of song, inquiry of science, weft of art, casket of poetry, abundance from the sea of knowledge." So he's not answering the question as in "what is your name?" He's answering the question of "what your name means." And that's quite important. Okay. Next set of questions. Ferhadna asks, "What art do you practice, O youthful instructor?" And Nether answers, "Not hard to answer. Reddening of countenance." I seem to have lost my notes. But I just wanted to throw you a little bit of challenge with all this, that, yeah? Our communication can sometimes be so habituated to what we know, to what we expect, and to what we feel comfortable with, yeah? Our communication with each other can sometimes be like, "Hi, how are you doing? All right. Where are you going? I'm doing this, I'm doing that." But there's more to say and there's more to communicate. I think if you're a Buddhist and you try and go deeper, this is a good way of doing that. I think there's a lot of trust in the room. There's a lot of trust in the centre. There's a lot of trust in the Sangha. So that we can, I think, take a little risk. Just a little risk, you know. Say a little more than you usually say. Say, make it a bit more yourself. What do you really feel? How you really are? And in that way, we can develop our speech and our communication further. Thank you.